From Washington, this is the CQ Budget Podcast, your leading Capitol Hill source on how Congress allocates federal taxpayer dollars. And welcome back to the CQ Budget Podcast. I'm David Lerman, your budget tracker. Happy Monday. I hope you all had a good weekend. But if you're anything like your budget tracker, you spend part of it combing through a 1,000-page spending package, or at least the summaries that lawmakers were kind enough to release on Sunday. It does come a little late, we should say, because the 2024 fiscal year is already almost half over, but better late than never, I suppose. And the money in this package is what some federal agencies will likely get to spend between now and September 30, the end of the fiscal year. That's if this measure passes this week in both the House and the Senate. If not, we face a partial government shutdown starting Friday night. And if that sounds like deja vu, it's because it is. Congress just faced a shutdown threat just last week, as we reported, and they passed the fourth stopgap measure of the year to head it off. So now here we are again. The next deadline is this Friday, when funding for four of the 12 annual bills would lapse. This new package bundles six of the bills together, though it still doesn't represent the majority of discretionary spending. The rest of it is due on March 22, but it's a good start. So who are the winners and losers in this new package, and how does it get across the finish line? We want to talk about all of that today, and joining me to do that are Peter Cohn, the managing editor of CQ Roll Call. Welcome back, Pete.
Great to be here, David.
And Aidan Quigley, the appropriations reporter at CQ Roll Call. Thanks again, Aidan.
Yep, thanks for having me. It's a fun, exciting day here as we're finally moving on final fiscal 24 approach.
Yeah, it is indeed. So let's dissect this new package a little bit. I think it's fair to say that it mostly holds spending relatively flat compared to last year, but some federal agencies fare much better than others. And both parties were jockeying for political advantage here in these endless months of negotiations. We saw a lot of political spins Sunday from both sides trying to tout their victories, to claim that they got the better end of the deal in this final package. So, Aidan, what stands out to you in this package? How did Republicans do and how did Democrats do?
Yeah, I think it depends on what vantage point you want to look at. You know, if you want to think of fiscal 2024 appropriations as a whole, you know, you have to factor in the debt limit deal, which obviously, you know, brought these spending caps, which led us to have appropriations landscape that would probably be more favorable to Republicans than a normal fiscal year, you know, would have been if there was no spending caps in the debt limit bill. But if you want to look more narrowly, obviously Republicans had been talking a lot about how they wanted some major policy wins in these bills, and they didn't really get many of those. Of course, they need Democrats to pass and President Joe Biden to sign. So there was never an expectation that they were going to get a lot of them, but they definitely kind of fell short of what they had been saying that they were seeking in coming weeks and, you know, the past weeks.
Pete, what would you add to that?
Yeah, I would add, I agree with everything Aidan just said. It really does kind of agree. It kind of matters on what your starting point is. I mean, there's this bill, it's extremely complicated to look at it kind of just in isolation. And there's so many different ways to do the math on this. But it certainly does appear that on its face, Republicans have a big talking point in that they've actually successfully cut spending for non-defense, non-veterans-related programs below the previous year. I think that's the first time in about a decade that that's happened. So that's kind of a, you know, a step in that direction of fiscal responsibility or what have you, whatever, you know, the Republican talking points have been on that.
That clearly was the big priority for them is non-defense spending. They just feel it's too much and they want to get it down. And so this does take a step in that direction, I guess. Although we don't know, because we don't have the other bills yet, we don't know how it all comes out in the wash, right? I mean, we're still sort of halfway through the process.
Yeah. I mean, I think the way the math ultimately will shake out on that is that there will probably be some cuts overall to non-defense. Now, veterans gets a big boost. I mean, both sides of the aisle are on board with that. I mean, not only in this particular bill, but as Aiden said, the debt limit bill itself included a big chunk of money for the VA in advance. So that's kind of already there, ready to go for the VA, and that's a big increase over the previous year to deal with that law they passed, the so-called PACT Act, the new toxic exposure benefit program for veterans. So veterans are being taken care of, but you look through the bills and there's a lot of agencies that are being reduced below the previous year. And if you're a member of either party, you can look at that and say, well, again, you have to look at everything else that's going on in the budget, because you have these advance appropriations, not only for the VA, but the infrastructure law provided a gigantic amount of money for some of these agencies. So on its face, the Department of Transportation getting cut by $1.7 billion. But then wait a second, you got to look at all the other money for DOT that's going out the door from the infrastructure law, the Highway Trust Fund, and the cuts don't look so bad anymore. So, same thing with EPA. Republicans really trumpeted a big win on cutting the EPA. But there's some things that have happened in prior laws that actually, increase that amount for the EPA, and they don't come out as badly in the law. So this is, as it is every year, this is an exercise in both parties claiming credit for as many wins and spinning it, 100 different ways to make it look like they got the better end of the deal. And who's going to be the judge of that? I guess the voters.
Right. But Republicans did get a chance in these bills to take a whack at some of the agencies they hate, right? One is the EPA, one is the FBI, the ATF, alcohol, tobacco, firearms comes to mind, right? So those are several where they got their little digs in and could make some real cuts. More symbolic. Well, you make a good point, Pete, about how there's also some offsetting money and some other laws. So it's hard to know how it all shakes out in the wash.
There's some real cuts in there for sure. Yeah, some of the ones you mentioned. Absolutely. I mean, DOJ is getting dinged by over $1 billion below the previous year, and so that's a nod to the Republicans from the Freedom Caucus and outside the Freedom Caucus who have said this agency has been quote unquote weaponized against Republicans and Republican politicians. And, there's provision in there. There's a whole kerfuffle during the pandemic about parents being very concerned about what was happening with their local schools and what the school boards were doing with regard to mask policies and other things. And there's a provision in there that sort of says, hey, the FBI can't do certain things to monitor what's happening at school board meeting. So there are some of these wins in there, but I would say certainly on the huge kind of high profile issues that have been raised over the last year, policy riders on abortion, gun rights, things like that. Most of those kind of, really sensitive culture war type things have been resolved in favor of the Democrats, right, Aiden?
Yeah, absolutely. I think when you look at the Vados question, which is a big thing we've been following since they did it, announced the top line about 2 months ago, was, where will Republicans win or lose on policy riders? And they got a couple, definitely. They got this one about gun-related rider in the Milcon VA bill, in which the VA would have to alert the basically national background check system if a veteran wanted help with their finances. That is that's been blocked in the bill. That was kind of the biggest Republican win, along with the rider that Pete mentioned earlier on the school boards. Those are the two they really were highlighting. But when you do take a step back and you look at the bigger picture here, there's no major abortion changes in this package. And, there couldn't be if you wanted it to pass, basically with the House and Senate the way it is.
Yeah, and some of our listeners may remember during the House floor debates on a lot of these bills, they successfully offered amendments basically to eliminate the salaries of several cabinet officials, including cabinet secretaries.
Right.
None of those things made it into the final package.
Right. And I think you make a good point, Aiden, about the Republicans did have that little win on gun rights on that one rider, which I think overturns current law, and it prevents them, the vets, from getting their names sent to the instant background check system in those cases. But then Democrats had a big win on the abortion battle, right, with mifepristone, the abortion drug, where the Republicans were attempting to block that drug from being sold just at pharmacies through a prescription. And now that's going to happen.
Yeah, but even moderate Republicans weren't on board with that. And that's part of the reason why the agriculture bill did not pass the House, and they voted to vote on the floor, and it lost overwhelmingly, along with some farm state Republicans who weren't comfortable with the amount of cuts in that bill. So that was always a long shot in the ag bill for sure. And if it wasn't there, that could destroy the whole package, chance of passing. So I'm not surprised we didn't see that one.
Okay, so the question is, where does it go from here? It's supposed to go to a House vote, we think, on Wednesday, likely through suspension of the rules, which means they need a two-thirds majority. What's the betting here, guys? Does it pass? And how many Republicans are going to... Can Mike Johnson get a majority of his Republicans on board?
That is a more interesting question to me. It will pass with Democratic support, and just enough Republicans to get over the finish line would be my guess. But when you start looking at the math on the Republican side, I'm not totally sure. You know, Republicans aren't back until tomorrow night, so there's not going to be a lot of time to figure out where they stand before the vote. But I could see a number close to what we saw on the CR, probably a little less than that. But I do think they will be able to pass this comfortably under suspension.
Yeah, let's not forget the healing power of almost $13 billion in earmarks.
There's that too, right? So, Pete, you think it passes no problem? Or?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, it should pass. You should get 70 votes in the Senate and, you know, 300 something in the House. Now, you know, for Republicans, it'll be interesting because when the Democrats were in control, because remember, and Congressman Chip Roy from Texas, who's a big opponent of this bill and will vote no, and, you know, key member in the Freedom Caucus and so forth, he makes this point repeatedly is how they're locking in, you know, spending levels and largely the policies initiated under the previous Congress when Democrats were in control of both chambers and the White House. But, you know, that the omnibus package in December 2022, I think only about 9 Republicans in the House voted for it. So he makes this point repeatedly is that, you know, all these Republicans that voted against this stuff previously are now going to have to turn around and vote for it. But yeah, I think that is the case because, again, they have changed. You know, maybe the overall numbers don't look all that much different from how they looked in fiscal 2023. But they have kind of changed the trajectory in some of these agencies, as we've discussed, and some of these policy wins. And, you know, I think I think Mike Johnson is sort of on the resurgence here, Speaker Mike Johnson. You know, for a while he was kind of on the ropes and people were really counting him out. But I think he sort of earned some chits back with his conference. And I think there's, you know, he's sort of... he made a deal on this bill, and he's stuck to it.
Well, that's interesting because that is a key question right now, right? Is what is Johnson's future, and would these kind of spending bills trigger the Freedom Caucus folks to try to oust him the way they ousted Kevin McCarthy?
There's no, you know, I don't think there's any sign of that at this point, and I think to kind of build on Pete's point about the. You know, right now we're operating under a CR that is keeping the fiscal 2023 omnibus intact. These bills are better for Republicans than that bill is. You know, this is the nature of having a Republican House. But, you know, they chipped away at some agencies they wanted to cut. They redirected funding to their different priorities. And, you know, this is better for Republicans than continuing under a CR. Of course, we do have the weird debt limit provisions. It would mean if we did a full year CR, there'd be a big cut, but I don't think it's worth really diving into that at this point, since we do seem to be heading in a good direction on, you know, this,
yeah, full year CR, they don't have the votes for anyway. So that's a moot point. I mean, I know there are members of the Freedom Caucus, they keep bringing that up, and members on the Senate side as well, and try to have amendment votes on that, but it's just a non-starter. Yeah, I mean, what did they get? What did that Senate vote? They get 13 people to vote for that last week. So, you know, it just doesn't have the votes. And you get everybody in the house, all the, you know, half of the Republicans and all the Democrats would vote against that. So you just can't pass it.
So this package would appear to be on its way to passage, which which leaves the other six spending bills for the year that are still under negotiation. Aidan, any sense of how that's looking, how quickly that could come together, if it's coming together?
Yeah. So right now they're working on the first half bus, which is what the what we're calling it, I think.
Oh, no, don't say that, please. Oh.
Yes. A half bus being bigger than a minibus, right?
I remember.
For the aficionados out there that
I remember
capture these terms
back in the dark ages, anything more than like two bills was called an omnibus. So let's just a little perspective.
Yeah, I'm under strict orders to not use the phrase half bus, but I had to slip it in here to get a reaction out of Pete. But okay, so seriously, as moving forward, you know, the six more bills, they're the harder bills. Some of them, Homeland particularly, has been challenging. For obvious reasons, you know, labor, HHS, education is the biggest non-defense bill, so that's always kind of a struggle to figure out. Negotiations on those bills are ongoing at this point, but, you know, I'd expect to see them, you know, released sometime next week, probably after we get through this journey ahead of the March 22nd deadline for that package. And I would suspect we see a similar wide support in the House, wide support in the Senate, and we finally wrap up fiscal 2024 appropriations here in mid-March, which, as we've talked about, is a little late. But I, for one, am happy to see us move on to fiscal 25, which has its own issues. But, you know, we'll talk about those at length in the future.
And it's been so many months of battle on this. Did they just get tired of fighting, you think? Why does it suddenly now? I mean, they could have done this months ago, right? It's sometimes hard to fathom, you know, how long it takes to cut the deal. Because
first of all, you need the numbers, and that takes a while because that they didn't have the numbers for a while. I mean, they had numbers that they thought might be the case at the end of the day, but they had to actually get those in place. And then once you have the top line, you got to parcel it out among the subcommittees, which there's some jockeying along the way. There's some wrestling between the House and the Senate, between the subcommittees, and who's going to get the money. So that took a while. And then once you get that, you have programmatic fights. You go, but you know, oh, gee, you know, I'm going to have, I mean, look, NASA is getting funded below what was either even in the House or the Senate bill this year, let alone a big cut from, you know, from the previous year. So there are a lot of agents, you know, they had to figure out once they had their numbers, they realized, oh boy, we've got to do things that we didn't even contemplate last year when we were writing the initial bills. So it just takes a long time. And then, you know, then you get to the policy riders. And with those, I mean, wow, you got to run that through an absolute, you know, minefield. You know, anything you can't figure out at the subcommittee level gets kicked up to the full committee. Anything that doesn't get resolved at the full committee level has got to go through leadership. Leadership's distracted by a million things. And so it just takes a really long time. We've been here before. This isn't the first time.
Yeah, when you look at the whole year, the key decision, I think, is McCarthy, after making the debt limit deal, deciding that the House was going to write at levels way under that. You know, at the time, that was what the House Republicans wanted to do. You know, the majority probably wanted to write lower bills and then try to fight it out from there. But we did kind of end up back to where we were. And that was kind of a survival instinct by McCarthy, which we saw through most of last year, trying to, you know, hold on to his speakership, which ultimately he lost in the fall. But I think, you know, if the Republicans and Democrats had decided to, if the Republicans hadn't walked away from the debt limit deal at that time, we could have wrapped this up way, 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 way earlier. But as Pete said, you know, it took them, we didn't have a speaker for a lot of October, you know, so it took Mike Johnson a little bit of time to get his feet under him.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, Aidan, you're absolutely right. And keep in mind also, this is back in the days where Republicans tried to be unified and adopt rules for floor debate so that they could have debate on the floor and bring up amendments and so forth on legislation, which is kind of the way it's supposed to go, right? And so in order to do that, Speaker McCarthy was trying to get everybody on board with the plan. And those were also the days where you might not even get a rule out of the Rules Committee because there were three members in the Rules Committee that might just vote no against their own majority leadership. And then not to mention, of course, what Aiden said, which is that if you're afraid of the motion to vacate, i.e. one member can call for a vote to just remove you from being the speaker, you know, McCarthy didn't have a ton of wiggle room there. So, you know, now Mike Johnson's come along and said, okay, we're just going to put everything on suspension, which avoids the need to have to basically for party. I mean, party unity would be great, but if it doesn't exist, we're just going to have to go to the Democrats. And therefore that reduces our ability to get the conservative, you know, wins that we want. So that was a position that Kevin McCarthy was put in. Kevin McCarthy ultimately kind of bowed to that reality and was sacked for it. Although a lot of that was probably personal peak with McCarthy. But, you know, now Johnson is basically doing nothing different from what McCarthy did. I mean, he made a few changes to the spending, the top line deal. But beyond that, he's basically continuing, you know, I don't, and in fact, Johnson has carried over McCarthy's staff who were negotiating these things from before when McCarthy was there. So it's just a nod to reality. And it just took a really long time for them to kind of realize that, you know what? We've got a group of people in the House who are never going to agree or accept with anything that we're doing that has to get bipartisan support to become law. And therefore, you know, but once they came to that realization, things moved pretty quickly.
Yeah, well, it was just a particularly prolonged, nasty fight this year, I think. It's late every year, we should say. That's hardly anything new. But this one did seem particularly drawn out in dramatic fashion and with the ouster of a speaker. So things have been hot and heated for quite a while now. And we should say, as they're trying to wrap this up, they're going to be folks should remember next week, President Biden is supposed to unveil his budget for the next fiscal year. It's been nonstop here. We're not going to be able to complete this year's appropriations before they're hit with the budget request for next year, fiscal 2025. So everything's coming together all at once.
David, are you trying to make me keel over before I've even had lunch?
Yeah, that's kind of my feeling. It's going to be a busy few weeks here because everything's coming together at the same time. And we should say that there's talk of trying to revive this national security supplemental package in the House. I don't think we're going to see that this week or next week, but it's could be pretty fast upon us.
Yeah, just on that note, real quick. I mean, going back to kind of whether Mike Johnson is in any sort of trouble or not. I agree with Aiden. You know, I don't think this bill or even the next FY24 package is going to be the thing that causes kind of a revolt against Johnson. But depending on what happens with that Ukraine aid bill, you could definitely see some people get really fed up. Like Marjorie Taylor Greene's been pretty outspoken about this, and she's probably not alone. So,
there's a sizable number in his party now who. Do
now
not like the idea
Democrats,
of no Ukraine.
You might get some Democrats who come over and support and agree to support Johnson for, you know, in their mind doing the right thing, but that's never a great position to be in as a Republican speaker to have to rely on Democrats to keep your job. So that's going to be if you're worried about Mike Johnson, I would say that the supplemental is probably a bigger deal than the this approach deal.
So a lot coming in the next several weeks, but that's all the time I think we have for today. If you like what you heard here, you should subscribe to the CQ Budget newsletter, which hits your inbox every morning the Congress is in session. You can find that at cq.com. My thanks again to Aiden Quigley and Peter Cohn for joining me. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks, David.
And thank you all for listening. You can find all of our coverage at cq.com or rollcall.com. I'm David Lerman, your budget tracker. We'll see you next week.